welcome to this week's episode of Time Added On. We have got, I think, quite an eventful pod ahead of us after what was an interesting weekend. Forest obviously eventually losing 3-2 at home to Brighton. So many points to digest about Saturday. Tom, we disagreed a fair amount on Saturday, actually, which is unusual for us. But let's see how heated tonight gets. Let's see if that continues or whether we've both mellowed a touch since Saturday afternoon. There's plenty of things to discuss on the pitch and obviously plenty of things to consider off of it as well, ahead of what could be a crucial weekend against Everton. But before we get into that, Tom, are you all right? Have you calmed down after Saturday, or are you still dwelling on it?
Always calm.
Good.
Hopefully.
Good.
Well, they can calm me down on Saturday coming, can't they? You know.
Let's talk about the game at the weekend. As I say, 3-2 home defeat to Brighton. Home defeat isn't something that we say a lot, obviously, on this pod. And I think the reaction to the performance and look, I suppose the defeat on Saturday at home, first time in a long time, emotions are running high. I think I stayed off X yesterday. I couldn't be doing too much with that. But just give us your thoughts on the match overall before we delve into some of the more, those crucial talking points. Where is your head at, Saturday? What did you make of the performance? And I suppose, where are you at now? I mean, you know, being able to dwell on it for the last kind of 48 hours.
Yeah, it was a game that kind of ebbed and flowed, weren't it? It was a game, if I was to sum it up, that no one had full control of.
Chaos, wasn't it? Let's be honest.
Yeah. I think there's a few reasons for that, but I just feel like there was a lack of control, and I think probably a lot of the high running emotions is because it's not the first time this season, you know, that Forest have let go of a lead, and this one happened to come very early on, like we have seen before earlier on in the season. You know, Forest are kind of the joint second in the table, if you like, for points lost when being ahead in the league. So it's becoming a bit of a bad habit. I think the fans pick up on those bad habits very quickly. I think they're quite easily notable when it's happening as often as it has done throughout the season. And I think this one kind of, you know, that was the reason why the frustrations ran as high as they did. But also I think there was a little bit of expectation going into the next, well, at that point before this game, the next two home games, having those two as an opportunity. Partly because Brighton's injuries and also they were a team that maybe weren't the Brighton, informed Brighton that we've seen before, that we might have been slightly more worried about. So frustrating, I think that's the way to describe Saturday. And I think, you know, it's that that lack of control that Forest had that kind of builds all that up.
Yeah, you're right. And that's the theme. You're definitely right in terms of the theme of Forest season so far is frustration, because, you know, we've sat in the last couple of pods now, and the pod we did last week in the international break talks about Forest needing to have learned from those mistakes from West Ham, and they'll be wanting to put them right. If anything, we saw a lot in that performance on Saturday that really reminded us of that performance away at West Ham. And, you know, it hurts or it stings because of what happened at Luton. I know, obviously, you know, the Luton home game, everyone's kind of hooked up on that. But I think a couple of games now we've seen a recurring theme of Forest just undoing themselves and shooting themselves in the foot. And if they can, you know, we keep saying if they can cut out these unnecessary mistakes, then it will come. And I remain convinced that it will come, and that Forest will eventually cut out those mistakes and results will start to turn. Because you've seen evidence as well this season. I still think there's enough positives in there. You look at the Aston Villa performance, particularly obviously in recent weeks. Forest are doing some things right, but unfortunately, the errors, the unforced errors that Forest are making at the minute are what's undoing them. And it's becoming all too familiar now, isn't it? Kind of week in, week out, we look at these moments. So it was definitely an afternoon of frustration. If, you know, coming into the weekend, there was a lot of speculation around injuries and what the Forest 11 might look like. Obviously, you talked there about Brighton's injuries, but Forest obviously not. You know, themselves coming into this one with a few doubts. Actually, the team news was relatively uplifting, I suppose, in a way, with Murillo not being out. Obviously, we feared, obviously, after the news of a 1-year, that that Murillo might follow and he might have a spell on the sidelines. Danilo, similar. We expected he'd picked up a knock, is what Steve Cooper was saying at West Ham. He started. I suppose the one downside, well, two downsides, one being a 1 year that we knew, and obviously he's going to be out of action for a couple of months, which is a real blow to us because we thought that might have been another game-playing tactic from Steve Cooper, but that wasn't to be. But Sangare as well missed the game on Saturday through illness, and I actually think that was a big blow. I think that midfield three has looked relatively settled. I know there was a few people that were quite happy that Danilo was in at the expense of Sangare, but I think that was actually a blow. But Hudson-Odoi also on the bench. So in the main, Forest are now, bar a 1 year, up to decent nick, aren't they? And that was, I suppose, in a way pleasing. Sangare, we know, as I say, is an illness, so he's not going to be a long-termer, hopefully. So, you know, coming into this next run of games now, you know, Forest have got a relatively fit and ready-to-go squad, haven't they? So that was a pleasing aspect in terms of that team news, especially Murillo, who had another good afternoon.
Yeah, the only surprise, as you say, was Sangare. Obviously, we knew that a 1 year, I think before the official announcement, if you like, yeah, I think even I suspected that maybe they were just trying to manage him and he was probably going to be in the team. Obviously, they did announce, and I think that's when it kind of put a stop on that one.
I think we're going a bit too far there, like, yeah. Releasing the statement and going, oh, got you.
I was like, all right, fair play. Yeah. You're telling the truth this time. But yeah, you know, Sangare being out, I think probably affected Forest more than people might have thought without him in the team. And I'm a huge fan of Danilo. I still stick by that. I think he's one of the most naturally talented footballers in that Forest squad and has a huge ceiling to kind of get to. But I think Forest lost a bit of control in the central midfield without having kind of a more defensive presence in there like they have done. And I suppose probably because they've got so used to having that consistency with those three, as you mentioned,
yeah,
by taking someone in the role that Sangare plays in comparison to Danilo, who was, I think, you know, whether he was asked to or not, was probably playing more of an attacking midfield, central midfield role. You know, I think that is where Forest lost control in the game. I think we know it quite well now. I think a lot of games are won or lost in this league with your midfield battle. And I think Forest struggled in the centre of the park. And there's a lot of people before that game that I think would have, you know, a lot of people have been talking about Sangare and how he's, you know, he's not met expectations and things like that. But I think, regardless of whether it's specifically down to him or just having a more defensive presence in there, I think it showed what we lost without him in the team, and the quality that he does bring, which is, you know, he's great at reading the play and intercepting things and getting the ball out quickly. But yeah, it was frustrating. I suppose you've had a 1 year go out and then that one unexpectedly. It's a huge hole in Forest, probably best starting 11 that you've taken away.
Well, hopefully he's back. Look, a week isn't a long time. It sounded like it was a pretty serious illness. So let's hope that he's A, fully fit and recovering for his own health, but B, also that he's able to take to the starting 11 against Everton, because I think he'll be needed for that one in terms of his physical presence. I think you're right. I think what Sangare, you know, Sangare, I don't want to do another 5 minutes on Sangare because we've covered him at length over recent weeks, but I think because of the price tag, people are expecting all bells and whistles, and he's not that type of player, I don't think. But what you did notice, and I thought he did it really well at West Ham and he did it against, you know, the likes of Luton at home, is his interception, his breakup play is exceptional. We saw that at West Ham when he set up the first goal for Forrest there, in terms of he broke up the play and he passed it. And I think he was starting to get into that. And I think Forrest missed that because, I mean, let's be honest, Mangala and Dominguez also didn't have their best games on Saturday. And I think as a midfield unit, it just didn't quite work. And I think that'll maybe food for thought as we come into this one. But as I say, still trying to clutch at some sort of positives. It's positive in the fact that now if Sangare gets back fit, and Forest are now up to a full stretch, and it'll give Steve Cooper a little bit more options, a little bit more tinkering to be able to kind of rotate, if you like, into the coming weeks, because he's going to need to. We've got a midweek game as well in a couple of weeks' time. So he's definitely, you know, he'll be wanting as many players available to him as he can over this hectic festive period. In terms of the start that Forest got, it's very reminiscent of Aston Villa at home. Forest out of the traps really quickly. Morgan Gibbs-White playing down that right-hand side, putting a ball, a good ball into the far post. And it was a brilliant header from Malanga. That Forest couldn't have got off to any better start, could you? It very much felt like Aston Villa, here we go again. You wanted them to get that goal. And then, I suppose, not necessarily go for the second, but as you said, seize the initiative, control the game, play at your tempo. Don't give Brighton a bit of a sniff. Because even this Brighton side, you know, even with the players that were missing, they've got a style. You know what they're going to do. They're going to come at you pretty quick. They've got good players. I mean, it was disappointing for us, obviously, and he scored a goal that Ferguson was starting for them. But it was a brilliant goal, first and foremost, and fair play to Morgan Gibbs-White. I thought it was an excellent ball. I thought he had a really, really good game, which we'll talk about in a minute. But from that moment onwards, Forest just it was lacklustre, wasn't it? Forest never really got into it. They were a little bit laboured. Brighton, again, weren't fantastic, but you could see what they could do on the break. And it was that type of game where Forest were giving Brighton a chance to break at us, whereas typically we'd be trying to break at them. And it was a little bit of cat and mouse that first off.
Yeah, I mean, even before the Alanga goal went in, to be fair, I know we're talking 2-3 minutes here, but Brighton had a lot of the ball, you know, within that 2-3 minutes. So we can't say that Forest necessarily started off extremely well, because it's not like we saw Forest go at Brighton, score, and then sit back. They probably just reverted to how it was within in a very small amount of time after that goal. And it was disappointing, because once you get the 1-0, I suppose, it's taken the momentum of the game with you, which Forest didn't. You know, they left that with Brighton, and Brighton took all the momentum. And Brighton, you know, being slightly harsh, because I, you know, at the start I said it ebbed and flowed, and Forest were trying to get forward, as were Brighton, but the difference was that it always felt like Brighton were more of a threat when they were coming forward than when Forest were, and Forest were giving the ball away, making sloppy decisions. You know, I've already said I'm a big Danilo fan, but look, he gives the ball away for the Brighton goal, and it's a sloppy, you know, pass that he's tried to do, very inaccurate. And they come down the other end and score. And it was the sloppiness that killed Forest. You know, when Brighton were coming forward, albeit they didn't necessarily have full control of the game and Forest were trying to break back, when Brighton did break, they were a lot more accurate. They were a lot more, you know, streetwise probably about the way that they were going about it. And when Forest were going about it, it was sloppy, indecisive. Even though, if you look at the stats, you'll see more shots for Forest, and you know, you won't see a Brighton dominating performance. It just felt mentally that Brighton were more of the threat when we saw them, and that's what was disappointing. You know, when you've scored the goal early on, that I said it at the start, it's having a bit more control of the game. You've just got ahead 3 minutes, and it's all now Brighton's to do. They're desperate for the result. They're the ones that were desperate to try and get something from a game before they go into a really difficult run of fixtures. They've not been in, you know, the best version of themselves over the last few weeks anyway. And so, you know, Forest could have just done things a little bit smarter. They could have put the pressure on Brighton. They could have been the ones, albeit, you know, it wouldn't have necessarily been the most entertaining for the home fans. Sometimes you've got to do what you've got to do in the match. And
yeah,
I don't think Forest controlled the game. Well, they didn't control the game at all.
No, they didn't. But we've said that, you know, that's a harp on what I was saying a couple of minutes ago, but they haven't done that, you know, for quite some time now. Aston Villa aside, because that was a really good performance, they haven't really done that. And that's the one criticism you'd say about Forest this season, that they've not controlled the games. They've not taken the sting out of their game management throughout 90 minutes, I would say, is probably poor at the minute. And whether that's the thing, let's go back into this one, but whether that's the team gelling or what have you, you know, so many excuses are labelled at it. But ultimately, it's about managing a performance for 90 minutes. And Forest at the minute don't seem capable. Now, as I've said, I think that will come. And I think as we get into the second half of the season, that will start to get better. But they've got to learn pretty quick, because we're saying it far too often now, and it feels like we're talking about it every week. But you've talked about the first goal there. The first goal was just Danilo giving the ball away in an innocuous part of the pitch, in reality, trying to play a through ball to Gibbs White, which would have arguably put, you know, it would have put Gibbs White away and down that right hand side and given Forrest a good chance to get a goal. Danilo just sloppy, just complacent in terms of his ball playing, and he gives it away, and Brighton hit you on the counter. And look, that's the one thing we've learned over the last 18 months in the Premier League, isn't it? That if you give the ball away in those positions, you ultimately get punished. And to be fair to Brighton, it was a good move and a lovely finish from Ferguson. But even at that time at 1-1, I felt like Forest were still very much in the game. It was about right having a word with themselves, getting together and going again. It just never really happened, did it? It never really happened. And I think the one thing about we say about that first goal as well, just coming back to that, is that Danilo gave the ball away, but the build-up play to go from where the ball was given away to the goal was still a long way apart. And it's something Forrest could have defended that situation a lot better. They just, I don't know what the right word is, but there just doesn't seem to be that hunger to defend at the minute, if you know what I mean. I'm not trying to throw criticism around there, but they're not getting themselves in positions. They're not getting their foot stuck in. There's not the same desire that there was last season. And I think that probably comes with, we'll come on to talk about it, but that probably comes with the situation Forest find themselves in, maybe the expectation, how the season's going so far. I'm not probably a myriad of all of those things, but the closing down, wanting to get the ball back in that situation just wasn't there, was it? And that's a disappointing thing. The second goal as well is just, it's just history repeating itself. It's basically West Ham all over again. It's just giving them time and space in the box, and it shouldn't be allowed to happen. And so that's the one thing as well, isn't it? That you look at the number of goals that Forest are conceding at the minute, and they're not getting humped. We've not been done like we were last season, like your five sixes and what have you. But we're consistently giving away two or three goals a week at the minute. And as I say, I keep going back to that Villa game. That was the anomaly. But other than that, Forest are conceding two. You know, three goals, and that can't continue, can it? It cannot continue.
No, I think the defending point, I think, you know, part of it they will say is wanting to show a bit more composure within the game. You know, there was probably times last season where it looked heroic, but the last ditch tackling were because we were a little bit all over the shop in certain games, so it needed players to literally be crawling back and diving head first into tackles or whatever it might be to get the ball. I suppose, you know, looking back at that first goal, I think it's them wanting to kind of keep their shape and not lose that and lose the composure. But the problem is that you kind of just allowed Evan Ferguson, he's not bad at all.
He's an absolute unit for an 18-year-old as well. I can believe that. Hell of a player he's going to be.
It's a brilliant finish, but to give him the amount of space at the edge of the box, I mean, he must have thought all his Christmases came at once, because, you know, for him, that's the perfect place to be in the box. It's the perfect amount of space, perfect angle, and he finishes it off. So I think, you know, that's where that comes from, but keeping your shape's okay, but, you know, Forrest didn't keep their shape in other areas of the pitch. They didn't have the same personnel on the pitch that they'd usually have, so that might be able to support a little bit more in those areas. So it's a difficult one, but I know what you're saying in terms of, you know, maybe less of a desire to get to the ball at times. You know, you can counteract that argument with, you know, Murillo's tackle right towards the end of the game. And you know, obviously that is him flying in last minute to get the ball. But again, heroics probably look more like that because Forest have lost their shape, because they're trying to throw everything at it to get the equaliser. So heroics aren't always necessarily, you know, what as good as they look on the camera and on the pitch. Yeah. But I know what you mean in terms of maybe less of an edge to Forest defending than maybe what we saw last season.
It's just, yeah, I think you've summed it up nicely there. It's not necessarily about heroics. I don't necessarily want to see you Joe Worrells flying in and bodies on the line stuff, because if Forrest are having to throw bodies on the line, we've got a completely different problem. This is just it's a game management piece. It's the piece around flipping a heel, giving away a free kick, regrouping. It's just about being smart, picking up your man. I think some of the things that Forest are doing at the minute, from a defensive point of view, they're not even big fixes. Do you know what I mean?
It's funny, because I don't disagree with you. I think it's being smart enough to work out when the good times are in the game to clip a heel and give away a free kick. You know, almost in some respects, after that West Ham game, we're talking constantly about the fact that Forest are terrible at taking set pieces themselves, and they've been undone by silly mistakes, by giving away free kicks at stupid areas of the pitch. I bet you no end of money that during training after that game, it's been constantly about, you know, decision-making and not giving away stupid fouls. But actually, it's not necessarily a bad thing to give away a foul. Where it is on the pitch matters.
Exactly. Yeah.
How it
That's
comes
the game
about.
Management bit, though, isn't it? Exactly. That's the knowing when to do it and when not to do it.
We're talking about a group of players here that possibly some of them are on the younger side. Yeah. Some of them may be just, you know, are still trying to work out their way around the Premier League. You know, I think some of that decision making, that they've probably scared themselves into not being more confident in making that decision on the pitch in the game.
No, I agree. And that's why we're sat here talking on a podcast on a Monday night and not managers, are we? I mean, it's not easy. It's hard. But that's the one positive I do take from it, is that I'd be more worried, as you just said, if Forest were having to throw bodies on the line and they were having to do the last-ditch defending. They're not. They're actually in a relatively decent shape most of the time. And it's just about getting some of the more basics right. You can't be giving players of Brighton's quality, even if it wasn't the start of their first choice 11, but you can't be giving players of their quality all the free time in the world, same at West Ham, etc. So, you know, but it can be fixed. It can be rectified. Let's talk about the second half, because the second half was bonkers. I think it's probably the best way of putting it. It was crazy from start to finish. I mean, let's talk about the Brighton penalty that was awarded to them, which at that point, ultimately, it was the winner, but it looked a long way back from Forest, you know, when that penalty was given. In terms of the penalty decision itself, I mean, seeing it back, I think at the time, and I'm not going to quote you, you can shoot me down, but at the time, I think you suggested it looked like a penalty. It did from our end. We are obviously in the upper trend. Having watched that back, not in a month of Sundays, is that really a penalty, is it? And we'll talk about the penalty that Forest were given, but it was a knock-on effect of that ultimately. But was it a penalty? Soft decision. VAR did take a look. So obviously you have to give Anthony Taylor the benefit of the doubt there. And as soon as that one goes 3-1, it's game, set and match for you. And to be honest with you, at that point, we feared that it could turn into a 4-5-1, didn't we? It had that kind of afternoon on the cards at that point, so early on in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, those penalties, they can be given.
But you're going to be seeing them week in, week out, aren't you?
I know, and look, it feels like I'm having a podcast conversation with Steve Cooper here. Look, yeah, I get that, but I've said this before about... I do. We've had this conversation before about different players in different circumstances in different games. If you are given the opportunity for the referee to give a penalty, then you've taken that risk, and therefore a penalty can be given. Now, I get it. It's one of the ones on the softer side that we see, but how many times are we saying that in modern-day football, in other games, involving other teams? Anyway, you know, they can be given. I get it. I wouldn't necessarily... I would say that's more of a penalty than the Forest one, personally. But... you know,
once you've given one, you're giving
them back. Once you've given that one, you've got to give the other one. Yeah, and that's that. At least he's stayed consistent in that respect. I get mentally that maybe they're going.
Well, he hasn't stayed consistent, has he? The VAR stayed consistent because he didn't give it. To be fair, the Hudson-Odoi one, we'll come back.
But at the end of the day, the decisions have been made, regardless of how they've come about in the end. So that's the point of VAR. I'm not sticking up for VAR. We can talk about this all day. About the good thing.
I think we're going to get on to a good beer, because I think me and you are going to disagree quite a bit in the next 5 minutes. But yeah,
but I think it can be given. Therefore, it's the risk that the player's taken, and therefore,
It can be. I'm not going to use my favourite phrase again, but that's just another prime example. Just don't give the referee an opportunity to make that decision. You don't need to be putting your hands on his back.
Chris Ward has made a decision there. to push him in the back or give him a nudge in the back. However much contact or force he's made, he has done it. And it's kind of just him on his own just doing that to the player, and they've shouted for it and they've got it.
So, I know you're saying 3-1 then, it feels like a long way back. In terms of the lifeline that Forrest got in terms of the Hudson-Odoi penalty, I have to say, in watching that one, Hudson-Odoi was absolutely convinced. Now, whether that was he was just shouting because he knew we were 3-1 down and you're going to give anything a go, I don't know. But as soon as he got up, he was absolutely convinced. Having seen that penalty back myself, as we all have, I don't think it's a penalty. But what I will say is, to the point we've just said, if you've given the one at the other end, I think this is a bit of a levelling out job. I don't think that gets given in isolation. If that game is 2-1, it stayed 2-1 and the other penalty wasn't given, I don't think that's given, but I think that's a levelling up job, which we could debate until the cows come home whether that's right or wrong. But you see that time in, time out, don't you, in terms of soft decisions then being given. But I think if you do give the first one, you ultimately do give that one. But it probably wasn't as much of a penalty as the Brighton one, I have to be honest. But it gave Forrest an opportunity. And then what happened in and around that penalty was just, I mean, it was crazy, wasn't it? Dunk getting yellow card. And then did he get a second yellow? Did he get a straight red? I think he got straight red. I don't know.
He got straight red, yeah.
He got a two-game ban, hasn't he, for saying something a little bit naughty to Anthony Taylor about his bonds, I reckon. And then, to be fair, look, Morgan Gibbs-White has to wait 6 or 7 minutes before he can take that penalty. With everything that was going on in terms of Brighton players trying to scuff up the penalty spot, the dunk argument, it was an absolute shambles, to be fair. And we definitely didn't agree about this one. But that second half, I thought Brighton, I thought their players were an absolute disgrace, if I'm honest, in terms of throwing themselves over. And this isn't me now. I mean, at the time, obviously, at the game, you can probably take that as a bit of a, all right, mate, sure. But you're obviously getting a little bit frustrated here in the heat at the moment. But, I mean, you know, I genuinely think it was a disgrace in some of their antics in terms of what they were doing, in terms of throwing themselves on the floor. I can't remember who the Forest player was that they were suggesting had pushed someone and someone had gone over like they'd been shot. You know, the keeper after Forrest had scored pretended that he'd been thrown into... I mean, the whole thing was just a shambles, and I didn't think they covered themselves in any glory there. But you can come back on that. You can come back at me on that in a minute, I'm sure. But what I did think was brilliant and absolute nerves of steel was the fact that Morgan Gibbs-White had to just wait while all that crap was going on and took himself to one side, didn't he, and literally did a couple of pass backs with a Langring Hudson-Odoi, I think, at the time. And what a penalty. What a great one. We've been a bit critical of Morgan Gibbs-White's penalty taking, let's be honest, but great penalty to remain calm, composed and slot it away. And then at that point, you think Forrest have got a chance here. Forrest are in the game. And I think you turned around to me and said, you can feel a 3-3 coming on here. I genuinely had that feel. The whole game turned in because it was for that last 15 minutes. Well, it was longer than that because we had, you know, the 10 minutes of stoppage time. For that 20 odd minutes, it just felt like it was coming. And Forrest, it was just one way traffic completely. So it was a great penalty, and I think Morgan Gibbs-White deserved it. I think he was a shining light. I think he had a really good game. We talked about him again on the pod last week, and I think Morgan Gibbs-White has come in for a fair bit of criticism. Some of it, probably some of it, not fair, but it was probably constructive. I thought he was absolutely brilliant, and down that right hand side, you know, I think you made the point on Saturday that that's where he plays for Sheffield United. He looked good, didn't he? And he actually had a nice balance about it. So really pleased for Gibbs-White. My dislike of Brighton, which was there before Saturday, I'll be honest, but has gone up an extra notch.
Yeah, I mean, I hope Gibbs-White that he takes some confidence from the performance. There's still more I want to see from him. I know he's still one of Forest's most creative players, definitely one of the most talented players in the squad, but I think there's more to come from him. But look, he's got himself an assist within the first few minutes of the match. He's gone on to score the penalty, and he's been a shining light throughout the game, and probably should have scored another with the header that he messed up. But he had a fantastic game, and I think he can take that away and take that performance into the next one. Then that's a win for Forrest. I mean, yeah, I did mention the fact, obviously, he used to play on the wing for Sheffield United, and he had an exceptional season there. you know, personally, I think it wouldn't shock me to see him in the number 10 role against Everton with potentially Elanga and Hudson-Odoi both starting. But let's see what happens there. But, you know, I think he had a good performance and the kind of performance that we've been waiting for from him, I think, or the start of a performance like that. So let's hope he can take that to the next one. I mean, in terms of your opinion on Brighton and their antics, as you call it.
Skullduggery.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with it, personally. I mean, look, it's not nice to be on the other end of it. Obviously not. But I'll tell you right now, if Forest were away at Brighton and we were trying everything to get a win, I don't see a problem
with it. I'm sure someone will come back at me in the comments. I mean, probably not because it's a Forest podcast, so it probably won't shine a light, but obviously maybe perhaps...
If anything, I'll probably get criticised. But the simple truth of the matter is that Forest have done it in the past.
But it's Gibbs White at Man City is the example that's coming to my mind. But
I mean, there's plenty of examples we can probably dig out for Forest. It happens, and they were obviously desperate for the win. I said it, last week. Said it this week, they're coming into a really difficult run of games coming on, and this Forest game is one of the final couple that on paper they will probably feel like they need to win in order to keep themselves kind of within the area of the table that they want to be in. So they were desperate for the win. You know, we've not gone on to this bit yet.
Well, we're coming on to it.
Well, I won't talk about that. But, the way that they've put themselves about in the game, obviously,
they've defended
in the car on their way home, you know. Is that because they knew how difficult it is to come to the City Ground? Yeah, quite possibly. I think they were just doing everything they could to get something from the game. I personally didn't see an issue with it.
Deserby said as much. Well, let's come on to that. Because look, I've said it there. The last 25 minutes was all Forest. But a lot of knocking at the door, but they didn't really... I mean, I don't think the keeper's had a worldie to make, has he? Let's be honest. The Yates header, obviously you've just touched on the Gibbs White header that was fluffed, but Forest have had a lot of territory then. I don't think they did enough with it. They got the ball out wide and Nico came on and you think, right, get his crossing ability in, and he's not really done much, has he, there, to be honest, since he's come on. And you think that's a real disappointing because he got into some good positions and it just didn't happen for Forest. It wasn't to be. I don't think Forest can really have any qualms over that, I don't think, over the 90 minutes. I think Brighton deserved to take all 3 points. The reaction at full-time was I don't get the anger necessarily in terms of the reaction at full-time. What I said to you on Saturday was I actually took that, and you disagreed with me heavily on Saturday, is that I took that when I watched that reaction, I took that as a huge compliment as a Forest fan, actually, that Brighton is celebrating. Though I have no issue. They were down to 10 men. They got so many injuries. Deserby said all this afterwards. They've literally had to defend... We go back to the bodies on the line job. They were throwing bodies on the line in that kind of last 20 minutes to keep Forest at bay. They've had to defend really well and they've celebrated a huge 3 points. They've not won a game since the end of September, I think it was. So I get it. But I think an element of that was the fact that they've come to the City Ground and teams don't win at the City Ground. So I think that does build into it. And I think that in a way, that was a small kind of, I suppose, a small positive for me in the fact that that teams do come to Forest now. They don't look at that as an easy afternoon as you would do. You know, and I know Forest aren't a newly promoted side anymore in our second season, but not many teams in their second season of the Premier League will kind of have that reaction when teams beat you at your own gaff. So I no issue with the celebration, and I can't understand why people are still moaning about the way that they'd won the Champions League. It's fine. Let them. We would have been ecstatic in that away end as well. No problem whatsoever. I actually took it as a little bit of a compliment.
Yeah, I mean, part of it will be probably to do with the fact they got a man sent off, and they will probably say that the penalty they got given against them wasn't a penalty. You know?
Yeah. Well, to be fair to Brighton, I don't think they've argued the dunks enough, have they? I think they've kind of gone, no, he deserved to be sent off, and
but, you know, we'll deal with it. High emotions in the game from their side as well. You know, so naturally at the end of that, you'll get that kind of celebration. I mean, look, if we don't want away teams to do it at Forest, then we'll stop beat him for doing the fist bumps away at the likes of Chelsea and stuff. And
I'm about to say, you didn't have a long fucking list there to think about, did you?
Yeah, see Cooper away at Chelsea. but yeah, you know, like it happens. That's football. I mean, I think it's probably for us. I mean, in a good way, you know, it doesn't happen very often at the City Ground. So when it does happen, it's going to taste a little bit bitter. But you know, I don't have any fuss about it. To be honest, is what it is.
Oh,
I mean, I don't get me wrong, I weren't chuffed to bits with it, but you know.
Thought you'd love to see it. You love to see it, Tom. That's your problem. So you just like people being happy, don't you? That's what they say about you. That's what they say about you. But go on, all jokes aside, because we've mellowed a bit over the last 48 hours. Give us some positive, because I think we need to talk about that Murillo tackle, actually, because I don't think people... I mean, at the ground, when you watched it live, you thought, well, that's a hell of a tackle. That is an unbelievable... And actually, at that point, I thought Forrest were going to get a point, because I thought he saved a fourth goal there for definite. But actually, when you watch it back on replay, and I come over and you watch it on Match of the Day, it's better than it even looked in real life, because he's kind of just... He thinks he's gone, or he thinks he's... You know, he thinks he's gone, and he's kind of just... He's not jogging back, but you know what I mean? He's not sprinting. And then all of a sudden, he puts the burners on and he makes an absolute worldie of a tackle. I mean, he's going to be good, that boy. We all know that anyway. But he had no right to even get there. And then to make the tackle he has without a foul, I think it was unbelievable. Huge positive. That alongside Hudson-Odoi being back in the squad and fit, and Morgan Gibbs-White for me. They're the three things that I take as positive from Saturday.
Yeah, I think Murillo is the pace with the strength, isn't it? Really, he's got both. You see many centre backs that maybe are more about the pace and the mobility, and others which are about the, you know, the strength, height, whatever it might be. But he's got a bit of everything in his locker. So yeah, I'm sure he'll be a well sought after player at some point, and he's, you know, for as long as Forrest have him, just enjoy it. But a brilliant tackle from him. I think, yeah, I mean, having Hudson-Odoi back, I think, will be a big one. I mean, for me, just hope it's for a decent amount of time with him. And I think that's the key, really, coming out of this game. Look, Forrest have scored a couple of goals. They've looked, you know, they've competed again. They've got a team now that you can see coming back, and hopefully will stabilise and settle again. We know, though, the inevitability in this league is that it takes everything out of you, and probably, in, you know, another injury might just be around the corner. But for the time being, Forrest have got good numbers back. You know, the key is, if Forrest stop these silly mistakes and stop the sloppiness, then Forrest probably get something from that game, whether it be a point or three.
Absolutely, but
the sloppiness isn't just this game as an example, and unfortunately it's individual errors, and it's different individuals in different games, which is the frustrating thing. She can't, you know,
you can't just take
sounds a bit harsh, like, you know, it's not just one person going, all right, sod off.
Yeah,
but you know, different players.
Yeah. So I know you're saying.
It's not like you can necessarily just pinpoint the area of the pitch where the mistake's coming from. You know, these players are all now, you know, so starting to show a lack of composure within different areas of the pitch. For me, you know, for example, the fullbacks have been an area which I've been quite happy with, you know, so far this season, and central midfield. But I'd actually say they were the two areas of the
great
pitch that let Forrest down the most in that game. And I won't name individuals, but because they've been brilliant so far this season. But as individuals in that game that wouldn't have been very happy with their performance at all. So this is the thing, you know, they've got to get back up to the levels of these players when they were first coming into the team, and now the numbers are back, show that composure again, because this ain't just one example. This is an example across a majority of the season, because you can go all the way back to Manchester United away, which I know it's Man United away, and people say that's harsh, but at that time, Man United were doing pretty shite anyway. So, you know, it goes, there's a long list of games I could list so far this season where Forest have let themselves down and therefore have not got the points and, you know, that they should have at this point in the season. So that needs to cut out, and it needs to happen quickly. And I think that's where the worry is coming from, because I think we all think it has to happen quickly for a few reasons. So that you know, that has to start with Everton, and it really does have to start with Everton.
It does. They're so close. So you don't want that to be the theme of the season, so close and nearly. And I think that's what we've seen so far with Forest. You can see that what we can't have is this yo-yoing of when we beat Aston Villa with the best things since sliced bread, everything's looking rosy, we're looking towards kind of the top half, top 10, etc. And then we have a couple of bad results. And actually, I said after that West Ham, other than the three goals we gifted, I actually thought there was a lot to like about that performance. Not so much, I don't think, this weekend, if I'm honest. But they're not a million miles away. And I think at some point it will click, and they just need to stop eradicating they need to eradicate those errors. But that's the worry. There is a lot of negativity after this one. And I think it all stems back to just what we've seen. It's an ongoing thing now. And I think people still haven't quite got that Luton performance out of their system. Are we... Yeah, we always say, don't get too high when we win. Don't get too low when we lose. We've just had back-to-back defeats, but albeit away at West Ham, who, not a bad side. And then at home to Brighton, yes, they had their injuries, but again, not a bad side. They're playing in Europe this week. Do we have to remember, we're in our second season, and second season syndrome feels like it's setting into an element in terms of there's a fine line between, I suppose, confidence and complacency. I wonder whether now we're just in this bit of no man's land in terms of we're not quite sure what we are in terms of the quality. We know where we want to be. Well, we know where as fans we think will be a good season. I think there's a difference of what the owner might think is a good season. But are we in this period? Because if you look at it, depending on how the result goes tonight, obviously, Fulham Wolves, we're only 3 points off 10th. We're 8 points off the bottom three. Now, that's different if, obviously, the Everton points deduction isn't in there, but it is for the time being. So we can only go on what the league table says. We're actually quite nicely placed. I just wonder now whether there is this danger of this negativity around this Everton game is without doubt it's already started. There's an article I'm dying to read actually when we finish that Percy's written that it's starting to crank up. It feels like another Cooper moment. We talked last week and we've spoken about it off the pod about this next six games up until Christmas almost being Cooper defining in terms of this season. If he gets through these next six or seven, then Steve Cooper will probably see out the season. That's my own opinion. That is, there's a lot of noise around Steve Cooper again, and it feels like every time Forest lose two games in a row, Steve Cooper's job is under pressure. And I don't think we're there. I don't think we should even be having this conversation in reality. Maybe in a couple of weeks' time if results don't pick up. But it feels very unfair and unjust. But here we are again. And I think it just goes back to everything that we've just spent the last half an hour talking about. We're not that far off. So it feels a bit knee-jerk is what I'm trying to say in this long-winded ramble that I'm having. But what I don't want to see Forest do is sleepwalk themselves towards danger, because it's this. You can see an element of it's what I was trying to say earlier on in terms of their performance, a defensive performance. It's this narrative around Forest. Well, we'll be all right because the three teams that came up were rubbish, and therefore we'll just be all right. So, the worst case will be is kind of 15th, and we should really be looking upwards. You could quite easily sleepwalk your way into trouble in this league, and that's what I don't want to see Forest do over the next few weeks, because there's enough in this squad not to do that, and I think everyone needs to be pulling in the right direction. But there is a danger, I agree with you, that the next... Saturday's going to be massive.
Yeah, I think... I don't think that, you said there that fans might have an expectation and our owners might be different. I would actually probably say the expectations are probably more aligned than they've been for a long time between the owner and the fans.
Do you think, though?
Yeah,
the owner. I mean, I can't speak for him.
He's never come out and said anything about. We can only take from what you read on, in articles or on forums.
He has made some pretty punchy statements.
He's made some punchy statements, but there's nothing wrong with showing that ambition, and fans would be going, "Oh, that's not ambitious enough." If you didn't say it, I don't think, I'm not saying that fans expect us to be like really high up the table, but I don't, you know, I think if he thought we should be really high up the table, that maybe he would have changed something already.
Potentially.
So, you know, I think we've got to give him a little bit of credit in that he could have sacked him already. Now, we've spoken about this before. It could have been because the right man wasn't available or whatever. You know, there are noises coming out, and that happens a lot at Forest, whether we like it or not, because it seems to be the way that they do things. But, you know, also at the same time, the same articles, the same, they've not actually spoken to anyone yet, or they've not decided who they want to appoint yet, or anything like that, but that they are getting a little bit frustrated. Now, the fans would be lying to themselves if they didn't say they were a little bit frustrated. And it's not necessarily because we think Forest should be higher or they should be challenging for X. It's the way that they've lost games or lost points throughout the season. It has become very frustrating because it is a game management thing that to the reason. And that's not me pointing the finger at Steve Cooper, that's the players. But yeah, ultimately, you know, the frustration is built from the way that it's happened, not necessarily that, you know, everyone's expecting us to be really, really high up the table. You know, you're talking about West Ham there. Forest could have managed that game far better and got at least, you know, something out of the game. We're talking about Brighton. We're talking about Burnley games, Brentford games, Luton games, Man United games. There's so many, examples of this season. And you're perfectly right in saying I don't want us to think of Forest as the nearly team by the end of the season. But how many times have we seen that from other teams in previous seasons? Yeah, I do agree in some respects. Maybe the pressures, maybe there's a slight complacency there with it being second season. But I also think that both the owner and Steve Cooper have built that expectation slightly high, because I think even Steve Cooper's come out and said that he thinks that we should be doing a lot better this season, or we want to be a lot better. Maybe he's changed his tone slightly on that over the last couple of weeks, because he's trying to ease the expectation slightly in terms of people realizing where we are, where we've come from. And he's very, you know, he has absolutely every right to do that. I'm not disagreeing with it, but he has also built some of that expectation up in the past. Yep. So, you know, we can't just play, or we'll build the expectation up when we want to and build it down when we want to. Look, the expectation has been built. So now it has to be met. So that's what it is. I'm not saying that, like, and I don't think we should even be really having this conversation. Yeah, I agree with you that it's too early in my eyes to even be having this conversation whatsoever. But unfortunately, the way that things happen at Forest, these things come.
No, it could, and it could rear its head quite quickly. But I agree. I will never criticise Marinex's ambition, because ultimately it's his ambition that got Forest promoted alongside Steve Cooper. But it's his backing that meant that Forest had the most, you know, the best chance, if you like, and the resources available to stay up last season. And his backing again this summer has been outstanding. And obviously he has a long-term aim, I think, for this club. And we have to get on board with that, because it's quite exciting. And mistakes happen along the way. Of course they do. We all make mistakes in any walk of life. But I don't think you could ever criticise Marinakis in terms of his backing of the club. And I agree with you in terms of, I think he's actually given Steve Cooper a lot of patience. Now, most Forest fans would have wanted Steve Cooper to remain the Forest coach last season. And it was ultimately the right decision. We can argue all day long about why that was, but in terms of why Marinakis perhaps didn't change manager. But I think we all expected him to at certain points in that season, and it didn't, and he backed him. So I think Marinakis has actually given him a lot of support, and long may that continue. I think, you know, there's a lot of talk about the relationship being frayed, etc. There's probably a bit of a mutual respect then. I think we said this before on the pod in terms of Steve Cooper digging in.
When things are going badly, relationships get frayed, and then as soon as things pick up again, they'll be all right. They'll have a nice cup of tea together and watch an episode of EastEnders or something like that. Like, it'll be.
But this is the point, right? But this is the point around. We've lost two games. And I know there's loads. Well, we talk all day. Every club, though, could talk about games up and down the country where they could have done things better. And that's football. That's why it's brilliant. That's why we do these. That's why we do this, because it's good to talk about these things. But Forest can beat Everton the weekend. Then we're back on track. Then they've got two decent away games that you look at and go, Forest could do all right there. Now, you flip it. And look, we can talk about that all day long. We know what that might mean. But it's not we're talking like it can flick. Spurs lost three on the bounce. I sent it to a guy today. Spurs lost three on the bounce. They go to Man City away at the weekend. That's not looking great. But there's no one, you know, having a panic there at Spurs, are they? I know, again, slightly different scenario, but you know what I'm trying to get at. So I just feel like you need to stay a little bit calm, a little bit, you know, we said this, that I said a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about where I thought Forest would perhaps finish. And it's playing out exactly how I see it in terms of Forest is still going to finish for me somewhere in that bracket of might lower it down to 12th now, but somewhere between 10th and 14th is where I see Forest finishing. But I did say that at times Forest would dip and then they would get shoot up and they would dip. They'd yo-yo between that lower mid-table part of the table. So I think this is what's happening for Forest. Forest is going through a little bit of a sticky spell, but they'll go on and they'll go unbeaten for a number of games, I'm sure. So I just think Forest fans and everyone connected with the club just need to stay calm and ride it out and see where we are post Christmas and go from there. I think that's your time, but then, you know, that's your time where you're looking at it in January. You've got a little bit of a winter break, you've got a January transfer window, and you can regroup as a club and as a squad and as a management team and go again then. I think conversations are of this nature. I just feel what we have these every time Forest lose two games back to back, and it's just, I don't think it's required at this point. But
also, really, you could argue that what's the point until you get another player that can score a goal?
Well, yeah, exactly. He's not been dealt with.
That's not criticism of Chris Wood, by the way, or any of the other players. But ultimately, you lose your best striker, you're going to struggle. Look, there's problems before he got injured as well. But yeah.
Well, let's talk about Everton, because Everton, look, whether we like it or not, the speculation's there. And if another defeat at home, two home defeats in a week would probably not put him in on Mr. Marinakis's Christmas card list. Let's just say that. So it is a big game. It's a big game. We just need 3 points. We ultimately, the whole club now needs to galvanise. I'm hoping we get a good atmosphere on Saturday night. Say under the lights, it's got a big game feel to it. This one's probably not the team that Steve Cooper would have picked to try and break that duck, if you like, and try and get 3 points, because we said last week that out of the two, we actually thought Everton was hard, the hardest one out of those two home games. I think the problem I have with Everton is that Everton's strengths are probably equally our weakness at the minute in terms of balls into the box, big physical team. Forest is going to learn. They're going to need to have learnt a lot over the last couple of weeks and put it all right on Saturday night. Basically, this will be the league table does lie, if you like, at the minute, because if Everton didn't have their 10-point deduction, they'd be above us in the league by a point. They're rubbish at home, Everton. Let's be honest, they're absolute garbage at home, but they're pretty good away from home. And that's kind of where they picked up the vast majority of their points this season. This is going to be a tough one, Tom, isn't it? And Forest are going to need to be on it on Saturday night.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough one. I think, it's weird because obviously you just said there they'd only be a point above us in the table even without the points deduction. But ultimately, I watched their game against Man United and, I'd agree, probably their strengths are our weaknesses. They're going to press Forest high up on the pitch, which I don't think... I think, you know, part of the problem with the form that Forest are in at the moment, or the last couple of defeats, I should say, is confidence. And having a team get right in your face in the current situation they're in. You know, they can try and play it down as much as they want, but they definitely are using the points deduction as it's us against the world kind of thing. And let's not forget the fact that Forest are one of the clubs that are down on the list as I believe suing Everton or whatever it
thinking
is.
Thinking about doing them.
Yeah, part of the disciplinary group of clubs that aren't too happy with them anyway. So I don't think they'll be chuffed about that, and probably that will be used as a bit of a stick to beat us with, I'm sure, on Saturday. It's almost like Everton's team talk is done for them.
Yeah.
So, Forest have to be prepared. I think what this one's going to be, it's funny, actually, because if you'd said to me the reason last week I said that I thought Brighton, and you said the same, that Brighton would be easier than Everton. The reason I thought it was is because I thought the way that Brighton would set themselves up in the game would benefit Forest, but actually probably the reason why you're so annoyed at them in the way that they set up for the game, the reason they set up like that was probably to completely counteract that expectation and to do not play the game into Forest hands and do something very different, which is get in Forest face, just ruffle a few feathers and upset the fans and hope you get a bit of a rub of the green. And that's exactly what they did. That's the way Everton will play. If you're, you know, if you're annoyed at the way that Brighton played that game,
I'm in for a treat on Saturday, aren't I? Yeah,
Saturday's going to be a cauldron.
I'm driving. Oh, it's going to be a nightmare. So
it's not going to be difficult. But you know, in some respects, Brighton was, I was going to say, the perfect warm up. I'm not sure I'd call it the perfect warm up, but
it was a good
preemptor. To what Saturday is going to be like. They need to learn their lessons quick from that Brighton game.
They do, massively. I agree with what you said there. Yeah, I think Everton are going to, you know, how they're going to set up. You know, they've basically got Calvert-Lewin up top and Decore in behind. If Anana's fit and he can come in place of probably of Jimmy Garner. And they've got some big, even their wingers, you know, you look at Harrison and McNeil, like they're no shrinking violets, are they, in terms of getting stuck in and getting about the pitch, etc. So I just think in this Sean Dyche mould, I mean, he's not had much transfer sway, has he, at Everton, but the team he's inherited there is not bad for him in terms of how he'll get them playing and how he'll get. And he knows the City ground. Everton were a really tough nut to crack last year, obviously. We eventually got a 2-2 against them at home, which was a bit of a topsy-turvy game as well, Everton taking the lead twice. So it's going to be really, really tough, this one. And do Forest change the way that they play? You know, because they sat in, really, let's be honest, they sat in against Brighton. They were looking to hit them on the counter, and it didn't work at all, did it? So in terms of this one, we know that Everton are going to press them quite high up the pitch. You would probably, on the face of it, go Forrester at home against Everton. They've got to go for it. But I'm not necessarily sure he does. I think he probably sits in and looks to fend Everton off on the counter again. And get Gibbs White and probably Alanga. It'd be interesting what you said there about does he start with all three? I'm not quite sure he does, but I think he needs a midfield three in there against Everton. But it'd be interesting, does Alanga come out for Hudson-Odoi? Is Hudson-Odoi even able to start? Listen to Cooper's interview after the game on Saturday, perhaps not, but he could be a good impact sub. But how does he approach it? Because I was thinking, I was very much of like, right, let's get on the front foot, let's get at him. But actually, the more I listen to you, I can see it just being a case of business as usual, if you like, in terms of just sitting in and carrying.
Well, you said there that we sat in against Brighton. I'm not sure that was intentional. I think that's what ended up happening. I don't necessarily think that's the way that Forest wanted to set up. I think they knew that Brighton might have a bit of the ball, and therefore would have to kind of wait for their moments. I'm not necessarily sure they set up in the stereotypical conventional way that Forest would counter-attack. I don't think that's necessarily the way that they planned on going about it. I think that's the way it happened because it ended up just being such a topsy-turvy game. I think for the Everton one, I think Forest might have to go for a midfield three. They might. It's a really difficult one because we'll say this and then, inevitably some fans will say, why sit in? You're at home.
Yeah.
You know, you want to be stronger than Everton over the season. So go for it. And I do agree with that. I just think the only thing Forest need to be mindful of, I suppose, is that they need to battle a lot in midfield and they're going to have numbers in midfield. So even if they do go about having a go at Everton, I think you'll probably see a packed up defence or midfield because I think they're going to have to.
Give us a prediction.
1-1.
You've been positive. You were so positive on the pod last week. We got so many comments about how positive you were and you've thrown that at me. And some would argue that might be positive, but I'm going to go 2-1 Forest. And I'm going to go for a drama. I think Forest will score really late on. I think it could be one of them. I think Forest have got this knack in the last 18 months, beyond perhaps maybe under Steve Cooper, where when they need a result, they'll get one. And I think Steve Cooper will pull another masterclass out of the bag this weekend. I'm going 2-1 Forest. But it's probably not going to be one for the faint-hearted, I don't think. If you want to, you can email us at timeandonpod timeaddedon@outlook.com. Give us a follow on X, formerly known as Twitter, at Time Added On Pod. And give us a follow on Spotify and Apple and leave a review. Tom, thank you for that. We shall. I'm driving up, aren't we, to the game on Saturday. So it's spend another Saturday, well, all day pretty much, an evening with you. We didn't say we hit up the Christmas market on Saturday to try and get you in the festive spirit as well. That was quite nice. So we're pretty much going to be there for the next two or three home games in the run-up to Christmas as well. So looking forward to it. But yeah, anyone else going to the game on Saturday, make sure you bring the noise. Let's hope for 3 points. We shall see you there. Come on, you Reds.